Wow, I'm thirsty. I wish there was a beer festival to go to.
Well, geez, it's like the middle of summer. You should be tripping over them by now.
Yeah, I am, and I know you are too.
Yeah.
They're fun to get a drink, but suppose you want to sell something there.
God, why would you do, like what? Well, first, maybe, not hops.
Your liver.
Well, nobody's going to want it when you're done with it. You'd have to be the sober one to try to show up and sell your liver to all the drunk idiots there.
That's true.
Yeah. For hop growers, for the love of God, do not go to a beer festival with samples in hand thinking that you're going to make a big sale, because you're wasting your time and you're going to annoy people.
So speaking of annoying people...
Yes.
So obviously this conversation today is about beer festivals and what to expect out of them. And really that's what it is expectation and making sure you're doing it for the right reasons. But before we get into that, we have some viewer mail
or viewer listener mail. Listener mail. I got to find a jingle for listener mail.
Yes, okay. We need a theme song. That doesn't involve you singing, please.
All right.
Love of God. So, as you all know, we take comments on the website. We'll take comments on the Instagram. So, I'm going to butcher your name, Mark. Mark Klabbaugh at Mountain View Hops. So, I'm going to read this question, James, and please interrupt me when you think you know the answer. We have been trialing several crowns of Glacier for 4 years now, and we've been noticing that 80 to 90% of the cones have leaves coming out of them.
Too much nitrogen.
Okay. And so, here's the rest of the comments. This has not been an issue with our other 25 varieties. We've tried adjusting our nitrogen type. They've gone granular versus soluble. They've changed the source, ammonium sulfate versus urea. And they've changed their application rates, 150 versus 300 pounds per acre, and their timing. And nothing's changed. So he's wondering, could this actually be a phenotype situation? And what are our thoughts on
this?
Okay,
dial that back. What was the rate?
150 to 300 pounds per acre.
Holy balls, 300 pounds per acre?
That's what I'm reading, unless it's a typo.
Right? Mark? Is it Mark?
It's Mark, yes.
Mark, brother, dial that back. That's way too much. Even 150 is probably at the upper range for that variety. Dial her back, brother. I mean, unless you're growing on pure beach sand, which I hope you're not, that's way too much. So there's three things here. So I think he hit on all three. Timing, type, and rate. What I would advise... Number one, dial it back. So you want to be back in that 150 range, or maybe even less for that. Number two is timing. So you could be putting that nitrogen on much, much too late. The bulk of that, let's say 150 pounds, should be on before burr stage. If those plants are flowering and it's just starting to flower, and you still have half to two-thirds of your nitrogen to put on, you blew your window. You want to get all of that nitrogen, not all of it, but the vast majority, 75% on before burr stage, and only give it a little bit of a spurt of nitrogen once those burrs set into cones. So my guess is that you got too much, certainly up towards that 300 range. Drop back. Take a look at your timing. And then the type of fertilizer is really important. So you mentioned that. Ammonium sulfate, was it?
Let's see here. It was, yes, ammonium sulfate and or urea.
Okay, all right. So ammonium sulfate or urea, those two have different rates of uptake. Urea is slow nitrogen, so it's going to take a long time. And by long time, it could be 2 to 3 weeks before it's actually transformed into usable nitrogen. And ammonium sulfate is going to be a little bit faster than that. Keep that in mind when you're applying it. If you wanted straight shot, like ready to be uptaken immediately, that would be a nitrate. But the other thing to remember with urea is you're likely using it in pellets, and you can't just surface spread that. Those have to be incorporated, because you're going to lose a lot of nitrogen from volatilization. It turns into ammonia and flashes off. So if you're going to use actual urea pellets, you're going to need to get those incorporated into the soil. Some folks, I always used urea ammonium nitrate liquid, 28%. And, you know, being liquid, it goes into the soil. It doesn't volatilize. But it's got all three types of nitrogen. Nitrate, fast. Ammonium, medium. And urea, slow. granted, if you're not in heavy corn country, you or bean country, you may not have it readily available, but we call it 28%, and works fantastically. So that's what I would steer you towards, is drop your rate back, get your three quarters of your nitrogen on between training and or burr stage. Try to stick more towards the ammonium sulfate or that 28% urea ammonium nitrate, and just leave the straight urea alone.
I think leave the urea alone might be a good name for this episode.
Leave the urea alone, yeah. No.
So, Mark, I hope that helps, and I'm Googling Mountain View hops here. If this is the right Mountain View hops, they are in Virginia. And if you're in Virginia and you need some hops, reach out to Mark. Free plug, Mark. See, it pays to ask us questions.
It does, absolutely.
It does. They also do, they do hops, and they use the hops in things like soap and ornaments and hop pillows. So this, ooh, this nice. Is an interest. This could is an interesting kind of side market from, you know, the typical hops and beer situation. So, Mark, we'd love to hear more from you. It sounds like you've got an interesting thing going on there.
Yep, thanks for the question.
Yes, thank you. So, beer festivals.
Ugh. Who says that? Beer lovers, and a beer lover goes, ugh, God. It used to be, okay, so a preface for this. The reason we're recording this today is because here in Madison today is the Great Taste of the Midwest Beer Festival. And if anybody's not aware of this, it's probably, I still think it's the second largest beer festival in the country behind, you know, the big one in Denver. But this is like drunken hipster Christmas around here. People just line up. Tickets go on sale in May, the first Saturday of May, or Sunday rather, and people line up and they camp out overnight outside of the locations to get tickets. This is a big freaking deal. And I think it's 6,000 or 7,000 tickets they sell. It's 5 full, like, size circus tents, and it's hundreds of brewers from across the Midwest come to this thing. So it's absolutely ridiculous off the hook.
And Drunken Hipster Christmas just beat out the whole urea thing for the title, by the way.
Right, it is. It's a whole lot of mid-30s bearded men with plaid. Anyway, so it is a beer fest to beat almost all beer fests, and not for the amateurs. But having said that, we as Gorse Valley Hops went to this beer festival for over a decade as a vendor, not serving beer. They, you know, like vendor tent, right, where you could, people are showing up there. They're like, you know, selling mugs and T-shirts and just beer shit. And so we set up there because people sort of expected us to be there because we were in the beer business. And our booth was insanely popular, but we got very little out of it. Very little. I think over 10 years, if I made, I don't think over 10 years and being exposed to all those brewers, we ever made a long-term sale to a brewer for being there.
We already knew the brewers who we were going to be seeing there anyway, so it was kind of a, hey, how you doing? Sorry, I'm busy right now.
If they're even there. Mm. I mean, think about it. So, like, there are smaller beer festivals, and of course in Wisconsin it means we have a beer festival every weekend, but like these big ones, these brewers are coming from states away and they're driving for hours overnight, you know, red-eyeing it, and they get there immediately. They have to set up, which takes them 2-3 hours to set up. In the meantime, if you're there as a vendor, you're like, hey, I get in early. It takes me 20 minutes to set my place up. I'm going to go around and pester all these people and hand out business cards. Yep. They are usually in no mood to talk with you at that point. And even if they are, they're going to take that card, they're going to stick it in their pocket, they're going to forget about it. Because the exchange, you know, your personal exchange with them is not very meaningful.
At best, it's not meaningful. At worst, it's intrusive.
Correct. Oh, yeah, I like that word, intrusive. That's exactly what it is. There in our later years, to your point, we knew most of the brewers that, you know, we wanted to talk to, and we weren't going to wait for a beer fest to do it, but people just sort of expected us to be there. So it became more of like a little friendly reunion at that point, but because we weren't trying to sell them, it was just the fact that they kept seeing us there and we were friendly with them, it's sort of the long game. Mm-hmm. So we weren't there, hey, buy my hots, here's some samples. It was a long game. So, hey, yeah, remember me? We were at, I helped you set up your booth last year. Oh, yeah, you know, that kind of stuff. That's, I think, better marketing than trying to actually sell them something at a beer festival.
And really, you can probably do that by showing up in branded gear as a attendee without paying to have a booth. You can walk around and be helpful and all that. Although I guess you need to be in early if you wanted to help set up and be more of a pair of hands.
Yeah, and there's usually volunteer groups. Like the Great Taste, you can be a volunteer. You can get in early. You're going to help set up. You're going to be schlepping ice around. You're going to be doing all that kind of stuff. And if you're there as a vendor, like, you're going to have a little booth and you're going to sell swag, which we can talk about in a minute. But the idea of just being there and helping is something that you can't pay for that kind of marketing. Think about it like that instead of trying to sell somebody something. Or, hey, I'm going to network. This is not a networking event.
Nope, they do not want to talk to you. And you mentioned before, if the brewer's even there, this, when everyone is out dealing with a beer festival, especially if it's one in your backyard, your tap room's probably a little quieter than usual. It's a good day to get some work done.
Yep, it's that. And for Wisconsin, there very well, any given weekend in the summer, be at least two, if not more, beer festivals going on somewhere. In the Wisconsin, Iowa, Michigan, Minnesota, Illinois corridor. So that means you've got to split your team up. And who's going to go do what? Now let's think about this, right? Brewers, and like certainly the head brewers that are the ones that make the call and ultimately the ones you want to get in front of, they're busting their ass all week. And what do they get to do on their, quote, weekend off? They got to go to a beer festival.
Yeah, pour beer for drunk people.
Right. So just keep that in mind. I mean, you bust your ass all week, and all you want is a day off, and then you got to go and do more stuff for whatever it is, the industry you happen to be in. But now you're going to come and be pestered by people who are really drunk. And you're not drunk yourself. So, wow, that gets really annoying.
Mm-hmm. And, the other thing from a vendor perspective, I know that I was, I went to a beer festival out here by me in the early days of Gorse Valley Hops, and I had my gear on and my business card, so I was not a vendor, but I was hoping to make some contacts. And this was one of these national chain beer festivals. I'd say 3/4 of the quote-unquote vendors there were hired guns wearing a t-shirt from that brewery with maybe kegs, but more often cases where they were opening cans and pouring them into cups. Especially the large national brands were just hiring someone to pour beer for them. There was no one there representing the company. So that was a swing and a miss entirely for us.
Yep. I see that. Those are around here pretty frowned upon. They mm-hmm. tried it. I think it was like Beer USA or something.
Yeah, this one might have been Beer America, like
that's
that.
What it was. They did it once, and it flopped.
Well, you have such a density of breweries, more yeah. so than I have.
Yeah, well, sure, but it was just, I felt a little giggly, because I'm like, ha-ha. why would people pay to come to that kind of beer fest for national and regional packaged beer when they can go to a beer fest with local brewers? And, it just made no sense. I was just thinking, who in the hell on that marketing team said, you know where we got to go with our national brands? We got to go to one of the hotbeds of indie beer. What?
Yeah. And send no one representing our brand.
Yeah, so, how does that make sense? Yeah. Oh, anyway.
Nope, ha-ha. It does not. So from our perspective, I'd love to describe our booth to people. Because I went to the Great Taste once. Mm-hmm. And even from that one visit, I had fun stories.
Yeah. Oh, man, the stories. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's...
Up a booth. We had, it was a tent and tables. We had different varieties of hops sitting in cups so that folks could smell them. Usually, if I recall correctly, we were using dried flowers. We weren't using pellets, or maybe we'd show both.
Yeah, we would have both, but but people, you know, didn't know what the pellets were. They wanted to see the hop cones. And we would even, that morning, we would go out and chop down some vines that had flowers on them and haul them in and put them in, you know, jugs of water and wrap them up
the guy lines, yeah.
Yeah, the guy lines for the tent. And, you know, people pluck them off all day, or they'd rip off sidearms and put them in their hair. And it's just fun. But, yeah, we'd have the multiple varieties sitting out there. We would have a little bit of blurb about each variety, what it's like, you know, what it's used in. Just sort of informational kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm. I will never forget, I think it was still in the early admission stage, so maybe they let people in an hour early for paying a little more.
Right.
We still hadn't had regular admission in, and some extremely, extremely drunk young man / teenager stumbles over. I'll have whatever you're pouring. And I said, yeah, we don't have any beer here. We sell hops. Okay, I'll have some. Right, no, you don't understand. This is not a drink or an edible. This is we have nothing for you to drink here. And he wouldn't let up. It took a couple of minutes until he finally got frustrated and wandered off.
Right.
So we were not what they expected.
Totally not uncommon. In the later years, we would make hop tea. And so we'd have a couple of different varieties. We'd make teas out of them, cold steep teas, and have them there. And you'd get those people like, oh, I'm going to have some of these, man. And you know, it's like, what do you got? And we'd make up some stupid name of a beer, and we'd pour it out of this little thermos that Christine had. And they didn't even think twice because they were so shit-faced. And we'd hand it to them, and they'd be like, oh, my God, this is so hoppy. This is the best IPA, blah, blah, blah. And we're just like, just at that point, just messing with them and really getting them riled up. But yes, you cannot underestimate how annoying very drunk people can be until you're at a beer festival.
Oh, sure. And certainly if you do anything outside of pure hops, and I'm going to mention our new best friends at Mountain View Hops in Virginia. If you're doing soap and other things like that, it's an opportunity to sell a little bit.
Yep.
And get some stuff out there. Mark, we'll send you a bill when this podcast
totally.
Is done.
You got it. Your first paid advertiser, you didn't even realize it.
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk about swag, because swag certainly has a place, and you know breweries have swag all over, and you'll see at beer festivals, if you're not really a frequent goer of them, you know, people are handing out all kinds of free stuff, and it's usually stickers or coasters or sometimes they'll have pins that you can wear.
Stuff that you buy in the 500 quantity.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. That's what people are looking for. And then even the breweries, they'll have, you know, like t-shirts and stuff for sale, which is the goal. And if you haven't looked into this already and you're trying to get your name out there and trying to figure out what to sell, let us give you a little bit of a background on swag and what sells and what works great at beer festivals. So the number one thing that we sold the most of at any beer festival were t-shirts. T-shirts are also some of the best profit margin you can get on swag. The issue with t-shirts is that not only do you have to have multiple sizes available, but you also, the best sales we made were our women's cuts. And because women also like beer very much, and unfortunately most breweries and beer swag is just made in a men's cut. So we had, I'd say we sold probably 2-1 at beer festivals, t-shirt wise, to women. I think because we had women's cuts and women's tanks and all that kind of stuff.
And is that drunk men buying it for their girlfriends?
No, not
really?
At all. Nope, it was women. Usually if they found us and they thought it was really cool or whatever, then they'd go and find their drunk significant other or friend or whatever and drag him over, and then he would buy stuff. You'd get women buying the women's cut t-shirts, and then you'd get men buying usually hats. Not like by a large margin over t-shirts, but certainly they would be buying hats. The issue with like an embroidered cap, they're wicked expensive.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you look at them like you're going to go buy one from a brewery or whomever, and you're like, you want how much for this? $18? Holy balls. It's like, yeah, but if you buy them by the 100, they're still like $9 a piece. Mm-hmm. So you got a lot of money wrapped up in hats, and people like, oh, I don't wear t-shirts. I'm more of a cap guy. Well, that's fine. And, you know, we always had both. We'd have caps, embroidered caps in a couple of different colors, and then t-shirts in a couple of colors, and men's and women's sizes. I would say by far the profit margin wise, the t-shirts are the way to go.
And how, you know, so to your point, they're expensive. You're carrying inventory. You're having to lug them around to places. Mm-hmm. How much of that inventory of t-shirts and hats ended up being used for things like this, where there was actually profit to be made, and how much of it was a, you know, when you're not at a beer festival, cold call at a brewery, you're trying to drum up some business, drop off something?
Good question. In that case, I would always go with hats, because you never know what somebody's t-shirt size is.
Yep.
And unless you're Dan Detmers, who has a gigantic melon-sized head, most people can wear regular hats. So I would have a half a dozen caps in my car at all times. And then if we got a new brewer on that bought a significant volume or contracted with us, I'd always, every time we had a shipment to them, I'd throw some swag in there of some sort. And they really like that. The one thing brewers really like to do, and moreover, more than getting caps and all that kind of stuff, is I'd start throwing in bags of those mini candy bars. And people would just rave about it. They're like, oh man, I love it when your hops show up. There's always candy in them.
And yet you're not a fan of candy in beer for some reason.
I know, exactly. Keep the candy in the hops bag where it belongs.
Okay, so we've got the obligatory trend message and the obligatory Dan reference, so I think we're good.
Check and check.
Yep.
I don't know if that helps folks from a... I mean, that's not the only kind of swag that there is, because we still wanted stuff to give away, so for years I would print my own stickers, because I'm, as Dan, another Dan reference will tell you, I am a tightwad. You know, you can have stickers printed relatively cheaply. Mm-hmm. One thing that was really popular were printed magnets. So we got those one year. It said Gorse Valley Hops, farmers with a, or drinkers with a farming problem. Man, those things went, people loved those things. And they were cheap.
I have several on my fridge.
They're cheap. I got like 1,000 of them for like $45. Mm-hmm. So those are good giveaways.
Yep. Bottle openers.
Bottle openers. You got to, you know, you start looking online for all these things. There was a site I use called discountmugs.com. They're not a sponsor yet. Discount Mugs, if anyone's listening. They have a really good array and for reasonable prices. But frankly, you start looking at all these things, Vistaprint or Imprint for Less or all these things, they're all the same stuff. Really what it comes down to, I don't know that quality is going to be any better at any one of these places, but customer service is a big deal. If you want a sure thing, stay away from, like, you know, bobprintsshit.com or anything like that.
You just killed off another potential sponsor.
I know. Sorry, Bob.
Oh, man. I've been working Bob hard, too.
Yeah. Oh, there's our bumper right there. Mm-hmm. Nice.
So, yes, I think the swag thing is great. Of course, you know, from our past at Gorse Valley Hops, I don't know about you, but I got a closet full of this stuff.
Well, the stuff that I have that's left is destroyed because I wore it on the farm and I did all this kind of stuff, but I'm not one of those preppy business guys like you where, you know, I never have to get dirty. I actually had to, you know, everything that I have that says Gorse Valley Hop smells like diesel fuel now.
Oh, see, I still have 30-year-old fraternity t-shirts that I wear for yard work because I don't do all that much yard work. Mm-hmm. So they've lasted all this time. But yeah, the swag is fun. You know, it's great for sales. So I think that leads into a bigger question, which is, I guess, not even so much a beer festival question, which is, what are you trying to do from a consumer perspective? Why should these consumers wear stuff that has your name on it?
Yeah, good question.
You know, I've walked away from beer festivals with, you know, those fabric shopping bags, and those are great because you can use them anywhere. Like you said, magnets, all kinds of stuff, but what is the taste you're trying to leave in a consumer's mouth? And we've talked before about the fact that, do you want to go down the path of branding your hops with your name to the point where you got consumers saying, ooh, there's ABC Hop Farms hops in this particular beer at this brewery, I want to have their stuff because I know these guys. Mm-hmm. It's the Intel Inside thing.
It is. And we tried that for decades.
Long time. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It never really grabbed.
Nope.
Because people weren't so much interested in the brand name or AromaSmart, even though it is superior, as we will talk later. They were interested in the name of the hop, not who grew it. For instance, well, the trend of putting the names of hops on beer or, you know, on tap, say, hey, made with Mosaic and Simcoe or whatever, people would seek it out. One of the couple of varieties that we had that were ours, Skyrocket, when brewers started using it and started putting advertising their beer is made with Skyrocket, that was something. I mean, there's a brewery called Lone Girl here at just north of Madison, and they made this double IPA called Ham the Astro Chimp, and it was made with Skyrocket and what was it? I don't remember. Another fragrant but not obnoxious hop. And they couldn't keep it on tap. Mm-hmm. And then he's like, all right, they stopped making that. And he's like, oh, I've got some of the Skyrocket left. So he made another beer with it. I think it was a pale ale. And, you know, it's like made with Skyrocket. He's like, I couldn't keep that on tap because people are like, oh, that was the hop that was in Ham the Astro Chimp.
Yep, it happened out here too. We got some of that in the hands of Broadbrook Brewing, which is out by Hartford, Connecticut, by the airport. And they made their promiscuous IPA. And same thing, they marketed it as having Skyrocket, and folks who are looking for hop varieties and see something they haven't heard of before are all over it. I went into their tap room, because they're not that close to me, and I sat there for two or three hours. Every other person who walked in with a growler was having it filled with promiscuous. Mm-hmm. It was, and part of it was, hey, this is the new thing, but they had a hit. And it's not so much a comment on the quality of the variety as it is the what's new concept. So I do agree with you that the name of the hop carries more weight than the name of the farm. If you're trying to sell swag, I think we learned a big lesson in terms of putting funny catchphrases on there.
Oh yeah, totally. Absolutely. So we had our first tagline was the proof is in the pint. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that has some integrity to it.
Yeah, it's not exciting and catchy, but it does, it says something about us.
Right. And then the second one was, yeah, drinkers with a farming problem.
Yep, that worked.
Yep. And then our last one was, we science the shit out of beer.
Yep.
And that one worked really well. Mm-hmm. And because it was a little bit vulgar, a little bit cocky, a little bit, and it got people's attention. So think about that. It's not just necessarily your logo or whatever. It's another, you know, goofy saying, or even to the point, the saying or the picture or whatever is the point of the t-shirt. And it just happens to have your logo on it somewhere.
Yep. And you know, something to keep in mind, because you're right. The science, the shit out of beer, it worked incredibly well. I'm sure you recall, I was not a fan.
Oh, I know.
and I don't know. Part of it was just, and I am no stranger to profanity, as listeners know, but I just had an issue with stepping over that line because I am you said it earlier, I'm a corporate guy. I spend my day in a corporate setting, and that's just not the way you talk, which is different than the industry we're talking about here. It's just a different world. But at the same time, if you get online and you read up on beer naming, there's been some pretty decent backlash from groups about beers with sexually suggestive and borderline derogatory stuff in their names.
Yeah.
That you need to decide who you want to present yourself as.
Yeah, with stuff I agree like that. With you. I agree. But I also think that you got to have a little bit of zip fun behind it to stand out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because, you know, the proof is in the pint. I like that. But it's not buzzy enough.
It's not. And I think in retrospect, I was wrong in my objections there. But it just, you've got to be willing to put yourself out there in a certain way for that to work. I do think in this industry, fundamentally, that's a very acceptable way to go out there. And it's fun. And to your point, it's sold like crazy. And it would be popular with, getting back to the where this all started,
yeah,
it would be popular with the consumers. A consumer, especially a half-drunk one, walking up to the tent, seeing a logo with a hop cone in it saying we science the shit out of beer, especially if they're a college student and a science major, mm-hmm. is going to go, how many of those can I fit in the day pack here with all of my pint glasses?
And every person who's wearing your logo is certainly from a, if they're buying it at a beer festival, they're going to wear that. It's one of their beer t-shirts. They're going to wear that to another beer event, and they're going to be in front of brewers, and brewers are going to see that. And whether it's subconscious or not, they're going to say, Gorse Valley Hops, we science the shit out of beer. That's awesome.
Yep. And who there's are nothing, these people? There's nothing better than free advertising. Just ask Mark at Mountain View Hops.
Yeah. Hey, I'm not so sure I'm comfortable with the free part of that.
Oh, okay. Okay. I'll add that to the bill.
I don't know. What else do we talk about beer festivals?
Well, there's logistical. We talked a little bit about what you have on display, but you know, you need a certain number of bodies there because guess yeah. what? Some of your employees / friends are going to want to go drink during this event.
Dan.
Dan. Oh, man. Maybe Dan should pay. Do we have to pay Dan for using his name as opposed to getting, you know, advertising dollars out of him?
No, he should pay us just for the mental anguish and emotional damage that he's done to us over the years.
Yeah, but given all the stories, he's never running for public office. I mean, this is all on the record now.
Oh, that's true.
Anywho, yes, you need to think logistics, and we've talked about this with Harvest and just planning ahead. You need to be very, you know, realistic about how many bodies you need because everyone, you included, are going to want to walk around and have a drink or two. That's part of the fun.
I'd like to have two people at our booth, but not everyone would adhere to that rule. But, but usually we would have someone there too that wasn't a big drinker or what, and they just wanted to sit there in the shade and interact with people. Christine was really good at that. When it comes to setting up, you want to get in, you want to get things set up, you want to, in the later years, certainly with our brewer friends showing up, they needed help setting up. And it wasn't about paying it, you know, expecting to get paid back to going to help them. We would just want to help them because they're our friends. So we would do that. So I would say we would have, if we really wanted to do a full court press and have Gorse Valley really present, we'd have five people in full Gorse Valley swag, working the tent, standing out in front of the booth, interacting with people, and then, you know, schmoozing, going around and basically taking turns. Hell, sometimes we'd even end up behind brewers, you know, jockey boxes, pouring beers with them. So just because we knew them.
Nice.
So that was a lot of fun, but also goodwill and all that good kind of stuff. So I would say for a small beer festival, and by small, I mean, you know, a few hundred people, maybe a dozen brewers, if you're going to show up, you can do that by yourself. I mean, that's no big deal because somebody's always going to be around to go grab you beer. Or, you know, even brewers will be like, hey, you know, they'll come walk by and they'll hand you a beer because they know that you're not able to get out. I would say if you're going to a festival that's got, you know, more than 30 brewers there, let's say 30 to 50, 30 to 60 brewers, that range, you're going to need two people. And then if you get bigger than that, then start thinking about a crew.
And of course, you know, we mentioned earlier a tent and tables. You want to have a sign-in sheet of some sort if people want to know more about you, some sort of a distribution list they can write up. And of course, you know, it's been a while since we've done them, but you know, nowadays that may be an iPad with your website on it, mm-hmm. so they can just log right in and put their email address in, or just a paper and a pen. I mentioned a tent. You know, you have to stay cool. You want to make sure you're drinking water while you're there.
Well, they usually have tents of some fashion there set up. So, but if you're a vendor, sometimes they'll make you bring your own pop-up tent. So mm-hmm. you'll have to check in on that. Yeah, bring water and bring food because you will go broke buying food at a beer festival.
That is true.
Unless it's bacon on a stick, and then I need as much of it as I can possibly get.
Wow.
Yeah. Water and food. Have a nice banner or signage, pictures, all that kind of stuff to really decorate up the place because you don't want to be sitting there with just a folding table and a folding chair and a couple of pint glasses full of hop flowers because you look like an idiot. Put your best foot forward and look at least semi-pro and have a good-looking booth.
And it's, I mean, it's a business thing, but as we said at the beginning, be very realistic about what you're there for. It really, I'd say 90% of it is just awareness of your name. Mm-hmm. As you said, you are probably not going to meet your next big contract there. You may reinforce with someone you've met before who you are, but be realistic. If you think that the couple of $100 you pour into this in terms of the day you're spending and whatever signage you have made or swag, if you think you're going to make that back in spades, this is the long game.
Yeah, we would have, I would say we were 50-50 in terms of profitability from selling stuff while we were there, not selling hops, but swag. Because you've got vendor fee, they usually, you know, it's 50 bucks to get the booth, and then they know you're going to be in there consuming, so they want to make a little on that. The other stuff, if you're going to do this, whether it's an indoor or an outdoor event or a trade show or wherever you're going, you want to build yourself a trade show or beer show box. And it was like a Rubbermaid tote that I had. And inside of it, it was like duct tape and scissors and string and a flashlight and markers and pins and extension cords. Yes, extension cords and power strip and screwdrivers and that kind of stuff. Do not use it for anything else, because you want to be able to take that, grab it and go, and know that everything in it is there that you need. When I started doing that, everything went super smooth and people were like, hey, do you have any? I'm like, as a matter of fact, I do. and you're the go-to guy at that point. And then I had one. I had a separate one for printed literature. So we had all kinds of literature printed up. We had one of each of our varieties and had all kinds of brewing information on it and ways to use it, stuff about our farm, stuff about our consulting services and testing services as a flyer for each one of those. And so I kept them in this. We bought this collapsible sort of literature rack that fit in its own zip-up bag. And that was really nice. We got quite a bit of use out of that.
So, yeah, that sounds like everything you would need. I would love to hear from some of our listeners who've done these festivals. And, you know, we're talking specifically about beer festivals, but if you're a farmer that does more than just hops and there are other types of events you are going to and hops are a component of that, you may have a different perspective on all of this. I mean, here you're showing up as sort of an ancillary thing. Everyone visiting this beer festival from a consumer perspective is there to drink beer. You are probably going to be passed by 9 out of 10, unless you've got something flashy like the cool profanity-laden t-shirt or something like that. But we would love to hear from those of you who've been to some of these things and tell us about, you know, successes and failures, why you'll never do it again, or why you're a staple attendee at this, that, or the other thing.
This is like drunken hipster Christmas.